in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
Tonight, I have a very special guest. He is someone who I was just saying is a bit of a mystery. And I like mysteries. I like it when I speak to certain celebrities. I refer to these people as celebrities because they're people who I discovered out of nowhere. And they're people who even inspired me to step up my game with my podcasting. The person I'm speaking about tonight, his name is Vic Sage. He works on the Retroist.com website and several podcasts, which is the Retroist. You also have Retro Radio Memories. You do a bunch of other podcasts that are new to me. Vic, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, Mark, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I'm really excited to speak with you, and you know, now that I've tricked you into coming on, I'm gonna hit you up every once in a while to come back on and talk about some of the cool stuff that you guys talk about. And if you don't know the Retroist, I think it was my first introduction to a perfectly timed and beautifully edited podcast. It's very digestible. The episodes that you do, the one I just listened to the other day was, the chips episode. And what you'll do is choose a really interesting topic that the Retroist chooses. The Retroist is the host of the Retroist podcast, the one of many different podcasts, but, and I love the fact that it becomes a personal moment where he's talking about his own personal opinions and his own personal experience with the topic. He talks about a certain amount of things. He takes a commercial break, which sounds corny until you listen to it. And I think it's just masterfully done. And I think people have to listen to your podcast to really experience. Everyone I've turned it on to, I just say, go and listen to this. Go listen to Whiz Kids. Go listen to this or that or that or this. And people love it. Even my wife, who hates podcasts, will listen to it. And she's like, I don't know, there's something I could just listen to them, you know? So yeah, I'm going to shut up and just let you talk about your shows. And yeah, I'd love to hear how you guys find these topics, or how does the communication work on the Retro?
Well, certainly. Believe it or not, for many, many years, people thought that the Retroist and myself were the same people. Just because, I guess, maybe a way we talk, or maybe, I don't know how, maybe there's a small similarity in the way we write on the website. I'm not positive. But so many times I would be getting private messages on Facebook. It's like, you really are the Retroist, right? It's like, no. The Retroist is actually, he is his own person, you know?
I don't hear it, but I definitely see the shared passion in the topics that you choose.
Nostalgia is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it's, it always makes me feel a little bad when people look at it like it's a bad thing. So,
yeah, I don't know. Do you get a lot of people who look at it as a bad thing?
You ever probably not a lot of people, Mark. But I do think that a lot of times when you see people posting on Facebook, which is the normal mode for communication, I guess, at least for myself, if you bring something up, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai,
mm-hmm.
one of my favorite movies, probably in my top 10. And it's just immediately they're like, oh, you know, that's not that good. It's hokey. It's all that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, you know, you have to remember when it was made. I mean, it was way ahead of its time. I still think it's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, you know, The Greatest American Hero was pretty hokey too, but it was still one of my favorite shows.
Exactly. But and like I said, I don't think there's probably not a ton of pushback. There's one story I've shared online was Ready Player One when it mm-hmm. came out, the movie. I enjoyed it very much. A lot of critics even seemed to enjoy it, which really kind of shocked me.
I didn't want to like it, but I liked it. I walked away liking it.
There was a really bizarre experience I had, and I'll make it really short. I was at our local Barnes & Noble, and there was they had these tables set up. I guess every week they did a little board game night, or, you know, card games for like Magic, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one teenager, and he was a teenager, kind of holding court, and he was just talking about how bad the movie was. That it was only about nostalgia. There was no story. But, Mark, everything he was saying was totally made up. And there's probably 20 people listening to him. And he was saying stuff, I don't want to ruin anything in the movie, but like there's a certain point – you know, when they
talk about whatever you want, you know.
Well, but he was just saying stuff like, oh, then he pulls out his sword, like in Masters of the Universe, and says, by the power of Grayskull, and he gets this power. And it's like, you know, I'm not trying to eavesdrop. I'm shopping for books.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kept going and going and going and going. And I actually walked over and said, excuse me, I've seen this movie. What you're saying did not happen. And the whole table looked at me like I had grew a second head.
Like, do you know who I am? I'm Vic Sage.
No. I'm not kidding, not the least. And this teenager, truly, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be like this, but I really had a second thought that he was going to maybe stand up and, you know, do something.
Really? So, wow.
Yeah. I've never experienced anything like that before, and never since, thankfully. But it was really just this kind of bizarre situation. And the people at the table were talking about, oh, yeah, you know, this is, you know, it's like, oh, Iron Giant. Yeah, how cool is that? That's not a movie. And it's like just real negativity on things that I would consider to be retro. But
I've never experienced that with the current generation of kids, you know.
Right.
That's a weird one. That's strange.
It really was. It really was. I actually posted that online. I was like, look, I've never had a situation like this. Now, to be fair, Mark, I'm lucky enough. I work one of my friend's businesses here locally in Northwest Arkansas. It's a retro arcade.
Yeah, I see the pictures that you post, which I'm always very envious of. It's like you posted just a few days ago, you posted a picture. I think you're just having a cup of coffee. And it's like in the background, you have all these really great, stand-up arcades. And I'm like, you know, I collect a lot of game consoles. You know, I surround myself with a lot of what I consider, these artifacts of my childhood. But there's something about that particular room which really took me back. And I have a feeling it's really like that in real life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's the great thing about it is we do get people our age.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess approaching middle age, but that is not in the least our target audience. Our target audience that come in are either little kids, teenagers, and then, you know, kind of probably people in, I would say, mid to upper 20s.
Mm.
And they love it. They love it. And that's why I know that, you know, this kind of pushback, like I said, against nostalgia isn't just totally. It's just, you know, certain circumstances, I guess I should try to say. It makes us feel like we're passing the torch to the new generation. It's like, here's the Atari 2600. Enjoy it, not just adventure, but enjoy Activision's pressure cooker. You know?
So when I was a kid, like, you know, when I was a teenager, I already had a fondness for the new retro, I'm going to call it. Because by the time I graduated high school in like 91, I was already getting into conversations with my friends about the days of Atari. You know, holding on to your Atari 2600 because one day it's going to be worth $1 million. And I've yet to let go. And, you know, did you share that when you were younger? Is this something that you knew immediately at a younger age that you knew that you what you would like when you got older?
I think so. And the reason being is growing up, my father was a single parent. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I would say, get out of school and go hang out with my grandparents. And obviously their likes, old-time radio, you know, certain movies, things like that. I kind of adopted. I've said before on some podcasts and on the Retroist site, I was probably the only person in high school listening to their Sony Walkman, you know, with like big band music playing instead of me, so.
But that's a good thing too. You know, it's, I never got into big band music. It's one of those things that, kind of went over my head, but the, old time radio, I used to go to the library and take out these, you know, the tapes of like Whistler and the Shadow, I guess. I'm trying to remember some of them. You know, and now, I mean, they're just available now, and you have a podcast where you do release select, episodes. So I wanted to know if you could talk about that, actually.
Oh,
that's
certainly.
That's fascinating to me. I just love the fact that you – I was listening to one just the other day and today as well where you released an episode of Lights Out. And mm-hmm. This stuff is amazing. I'm sorry. If you could just talk about that a little bit.
Oh, of course. Well, here's the thing about old-time radio. While there obviously are some shows that are lost to time, there is so much of it available. And as you said, it's free. I mean, you can just, I guess, like Internet Archive, things like that. Sure. It's in the public domain, or at least some of it is, of course. But it is still powerful because it's all, everything takes place in the theater of the mind. So in that case of like that Lights Out episode, the tension slowly builds. It's like the slow burn. Mm-hmm. And then once it's the big thing happens, you just kind of picture this horrible incident, which we should say that was a horror episode.
Yes.
But yet again, thanks to my grandparents, Green Hornet, The Shadow.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Obviously, Mark, you can't see on the other side of the room here, but that's my little shadow shrine. I've got a shadow bust and about 75 shadow pulp novels and history, and the shadow is probably my favorite of the pulp characters. But
as a kid, we're listening to this stuff, right? I mean, and maybe it's kind of what we're trying to create now with podcasts. I personally enjoy podcasting, but also I enjoy it being simple.
Yeah.
And entertaining. I've yet to go to the world of commercials. I don't foresee myself going to commercials, but at the same time, I never want to take away the entertainment value.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But you just take some of these, podcasts and, some of the really great ones, and especially the ones that you've worked on, and you grab some of this old time radio, and it really does sit side by side in a beautiful way. Like you were saying, it's really just, it's in your mind, this amazing storytelling, and some of it's 70 years old, 80 years old.
Yeah.
The BBC stuff goes back even further.
They had great actors and some of the radio shows, of course, they had amazing, actors from film and television. I mean, Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, Basil Rathbone.
Orson Welles, yeah.
Yes, of course.
It's still so
powerful. And I mean, I don't know. Truly, Mark, I don't see why radio can't actually keep doing radio dramas. So,
That's something that I'm I've been wondering since the late 90s, and that's, do you ever see the radio drama coming back? I mean, it is kind of coming back, like we were saying, in the idea of podcasting. But, you know, radio, terrestrial radio, for the most part, is a dead universe. It's just commercials and commercials. It's almost unlistenable, at least here in New York. And, you know, I would be kind of interested if they, if there was somebody doing something with some level of drama. You know, there are some troops that exist, of course.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's like, you know, it's Queen, man. Queen had it right about radio. You
know? Yeah, they did.
I wish. Do I think it will come back? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it could. It really could. Of course, like you said, what we're doing right here with podcasting, that may be how it makes its big comeback. And there's obviously there are shows out there, I guess, you know, Welcome to Night Vale, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I even tried sort of throwing my hat into the ring there with the Saturday Frights podcast there for a bit. But it basically just became too much work.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. There was real quick, the Saturday Frights podcast. I love horror movies. I love movies in general.
Now, you have well over 70 episodes of Saturday Frights podcast.
Yes.
I want to
yes.
point that out. This isn't something that you can just lightly walk away from. Like, oh, you know what? Remember that little hobby? No, no, no. We're talking hours of footage. You know, this is a big undertaking.
Well, and it's, I mean, the first movie that I can truly remember watching was Frankenstein. Mm. James Whale's Frankenstein, you know, Universal Monsters. And I tell this story all the time, but my father woke up to find, you know, his 3-year-old son sitting up in bed watching Frankenstein on the black and white television. And my father says, he's like, you have to go to bed. And then he says that I replied, it's like, no, I want to watch this. And I can remember exactly the scene. It's the scene with Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster on top of the windmill as the villagers are burning it down.
Wow.
And so of course, Universal Monsters is, I love those classic monsters. But films have always been my big thing. But the Saturday Frights podcast, I have a co-host named The Projectionist. And, you know, there's tons of review podcasts, of course. Mm-hmm. I think there's the Retroist himself, I believe, a couple days ago mentioned something about that they said there's literally a million podcasts now available.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes when I hear numbers like that, I wonder why I'm even bothering. But at the same time, you know, I feel fortunate to have the audience that I do have. So if you are listening to this, I do appreciate it. Even though absolutely. People send me hate mail all the time. That's
okay. Oh, well. You have to love those.
Oh, I love it. I file. Well, I file all of my hate mail in the garbage. There it goes.
Vic Sage's annoying Ned Flanders voice was one of the reviews.
Really?
Oh, oh indeed, indeed. And don't get me wrong.
I'd wear it like a badge of pride. I love that.
I've been very fortunate that people do enjoy the shows, but you can't help it. You can't help but think about the negative reviews.
Now, you're part of the Retroist podcast is one of my favorites. It's essentially, why do I know this person?
Yeah.
And you go on a list and you'll name somebody who is maybe a character actor. You know, why should we know Michael Landon? And, you know, and you list, why should we know Michael Landon? And I love it. I think it's unique. I think it's unique, but at the same time, there's something very familiar about it. I think it's a really nice throwback to the simplicity of my childhood. Somehow I cannot put my finger on why I love the Retroist podcast, but I do.
It's because he makes a really great show.
It's very easy to listen to as well. I do a lot of woodworking and I could just get through like 4 or 5 episodes with no problem whatsoever without speeding it up, you know?
Sure. Sure. Well, that's, forgive me, I promise I'm not trying to just continuously go back to the Saturday Frights podcast.
No, I want to hear all about it.
For the longest time, Mark, I didn't want to spoil the movie. I want people to go out and see it. They may not have seen whether it be a movie or a particular Twilight Zone episode or what have you. And I just absolutely tore me up inside. I just didn't know where I wanted the show to go. It's like, well, do I spoil it? Do this? Finally, it was just like a lot of people were kind enough to contact me and say, just go ahead and do the spoilers. You know, we enjoy listening to the show. And which led to the, 28 minute synopsis of what have you, Phantasm or Reanimator.
Right.
So that's why I'd say maybe the second year that I was doing it, I tried to throw a story element into it where it involved time travel. And so going to, because the projectionist works at a place called the Haunted Drive-In, located in Haddonfield, and basically the Retroist vault, because we have to get it all meta, comes under attack. And it's something that we put in the show that we put these little bits and pieces that hopefully when you go back and listen to it, if you can stand listening to it, you could see that, we were doing these little weird things. These little threats were starting to appear. So the Retroist vault comes under attack. The projectionist is this, shadowy cinephile. He could be around for hundreds and hundreds of years. We're just not positive. And so he opens up a portal to let us escape, and we end up going into an alternate dimension, but back in the past. So we're literally at the Haunted Drive-In in the past. I believe we said it was like the 1950s or something like that. So for about a year, that was what the story was. But of course, obviously, we were still reviewing movies. So whether it be Poltergeist or Fright Night or,
Right.
But the thing is it was just so much work in terms of editing.
Well, you were releasing
special effects and stuff like that.
You were doing episodes about every 2 or 3 weeks, it looks like, for a period of time.
Yes, yes,
indeed. A long period of time.
Yeah. And it took its toll.
Yeah. It's, that's why I like this particular podcast. Because, I don't edit it. I release it for the most part the way it is. If somebody says something and they're like, ooh, I wish I didn't say that, we'll pull it out. But for the most part, it gets released as just a casual conversation. But I can appreciate the beauty of editing as well. It's a really kind of a saturated market. And sure. It's a real shame because there are a lot of people out there who don't have the passion that you have. And they have every right to release their podcast as well. It's just, it's so difficult to find the good ones.
Right.
I think. It's I think it's a crime that, you don't continue, following this because it seems as though you're very, passionate about it. Do you think you'll ever revisit it? I mean, you just released an episode 2 months ago.
Indeed. Yeah, we'll definitely keep doing Saturday Frights. I think sadly, you turn around and it's like, oh, wait a minute, Vic just released what? The Pop Culture Retrorama podcast? How many podcasts is this guy doing?
Yeah.
And I think
it costs money too. You got to host these somewhere.
Exactly. let's be honest. The Retroist is kind enough to foot the bill on all this. In a perfect world, I would like to release maybe one or two podcasts a month. But for people who are being kind enough to listen to you, you want to give them something. It's kind of like what we're doing here. While I may not be able to talk to the people listening to the podcast, I mean, I feel like I am.
Mm-hmm.
So like last month, I got no one was mad or anything, but people were like, when's the next diary podcast coming out? The Diary of an Arcade Employee, which
like I like, and I like that podcast a lot. Although the video game stuff kind of gets to me in the very beginning, but then I fall in love with it. I can't explain that.
the video game sound?
The intro, yeah. The intro, immediately I'm like, all right, I don't need to hear it anymore. But then almost immediately, I like it. I can't explain it.
Sure. Well, no, and that's the thing. It's like, with all these podcasts, and there's actually one coming out in the future that I'm just a co-host on, that's going to be called the Tune In Podcast, which is just all about cartoons.
Oh, excellent.
And Gary Burton, a friend of the arcades and a great friend of mine, he's the one that came up with that. And that will be done in the near future. We already have two episodes in the can. So,
and that's another thing. You don't want to release a podcast with one episode. You know, right. you really do want to launch it with a few episodes. And, you know, I fall into this as well. You know, I'm always working on another podcast. And I'm working on something like this as well. I'll tell you off air because I don't like making promises. And then people are like, hey, whatever happened to that podcast, loser? You know, you know, and it's like, well, you know, lost the domain name. You know, that type of thing. But having to do with the podcasting is one part of it, but kind of surrounding yourself with the, I always refer to them as artifacts. Like I collect old vintage computers and music synthesizers and a lot of video game stuff. And I have a 10-year-old son who also is now getting into collecting some stuff, which a little bit of pressure off of me because I can just live vicariously through him.
Sure.
You know, because my wife won't yell at her son as much, you know. But what type of stuff? Are you a collector as well? I'm going to guess you are. Yeah.
I am.
What type of stuff do you collect?
Well.
That you care to share?
Oh, sure. Well, I love reading. Mm-hmm. I love comic books still. Obviously, I play video games when I have the time, but in terms of retro collecting, I absolutely love Mark. I love Viewmaster reels.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. So I absolutely adore those things.
I just acquired a Viewmaster projector.
Yeah.
In the box. I think it's from the 60s.
Is it Bakelite?
I think it's Bakelite, yeah.
Yes.
I love Bakelite. I have a phone around here.
Oh, man. What's...
Yeah, I have to dig that out. I have a friend who somehow everything kind of comes in front of him, and he grabs it.
Right.
He does, like, these clean-outs and stuff, and, you know, he just calls me up at very interesting times. Says, hey, come over here if you want all this stuff. And it's, you know, it's not like I'm finding, you know, holy grails, but, you know, I've found some decent stuff and made some offers, you know, for some interesting stuff from the people who, you know, people die and they leave everything. So they have these estate sales. So you get in before the estate sale. You know?
Sure. Well, and that's it. It all comes back, I think, Mark, for myself on movies.
I'm sorry. You said Viewmaster. So yeah. do you collect different reels? Because I remember the reels were a big deal. People tend to think that it was just cartoons, but the reels were like, you know, Grand Canyon and mm-hmm. you know, different parts of the world, and it was kind of airplanes. A big deal. Airplanes, yeah.
Yeah, it does not matter what the Viewmaster reel is. I'll try to get it. And nice. I'm lucky enough that, like I said, Gary Burton, who'll be the host of Tune In, he has this ability, Mark, to go out of town to antique stores, flea markets, and just every time he goes somewhere,
he finds
something amazing. Amazing. It's like a mutant power.
Wow.
Just last week, he's like, do you need this Superman talking Viewmaster reel? And it's like, well, how much is it? He's like, I think it's like $7. I was like, yes.
You need, yeah, you do the knee jerk, like, oh, yes, no, cash. All for six.
Now, another thing that I collect, and it's because it came from my childhood. Do you remember the Fisher Price movie, viewers? The hand crank?
Yes. Uh-huh. So, I do not have one, but I do remember them. They would project on a wall or something, right?
If you had the movie theater, which I do, mm-hmm. it's in the other room. It's the original one. It still works.
Wow. Of course,
Fisher Price wasn't the only one. Kenner did Star Wars.
And there were cartridges, right? They were like rectangular. Yeah. I remember
8mm film inside it. Of course, no sound or anything, but.
No, Kittery, I wonder if you can hack
them. At least an alien one, if you can believe that.
I wonder if you can crack them open and just put in 8mm reels.
You can. People have done it. Like, if you look on YouTube a lot of times, that's exactly what that is.
You know, I'm writing this down, right? I just have to see that done.
I would never do that. I couldn't.
But if you had a broken reel, why not, you know?
Yeah, no, it's, well, because it's, you know, I could not do that.
Well, you know, I have, that's something that I acquired. It was a pretty big box of old 8mm films, like Chaplin films.
Yeah.
Some old stuff, some vinegary smelling stuff that I had to chuck. Sure. Yeah, some of that stuff turned. But, you know, it would be kind of interesting to kind of transplant something like that. That's actually really cool. I love that.
I think that there's a company that will do that for you. It's kind of, I think there's even a company that will do that with ViewMaster reels. Like, you send them the photos and they'll make them stereoscopic. So that, I'm pretty sure about that.
That's pretty cool. So those are your main focus. Do you find yourself getting pulled into other kinds of collections? You know, do you touch upon, I don't know, people like Pez, some people, like just early Star Wars stuff or Legos or something like that?
Oh, sure. Yet again, things related to Universal Monsters,
mm-hmm.
The Shadow. here's one that actually I don't think anyone knows about. I collect all things dwarven related, and I don't mean fantasy dwarves,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Tolkien and or World of Warcraft or what have you.
That's interesting. That's odd.
I have a pretty good shelf over here in the library filled with all sorts of toys. Most of them are Tolkien related, obviously, because like Gimli the dwarf, you know, things like that.
You know what's something that's really interesting, and maybe you've seen these around, are the old Aurora models.
Yeah.
You know, the company that distributed them was maybe 15 minutes from where I live right now. And I always think in the back of my head, like, I should really track down wherever they were. Like, it's probably a warehouse. They probably have boxes. But,
oh, yeah.
They probably don't, though. You know, it's probably sold. It was, you know. But I remember I would buy these models for like $1.50. You know, and it's like the Wolfman, and they're worth a fortune now. Really,
they glow in the dark.
You know? Some do, yeah. Yeah, they're like, I think the Wolfman had tombstones like glowed in the dark. So what do you think is next for you? Like, do you have anything that you're working on or that you're looking to get out? Because I also sense that I don't know. Are you a book type of person in the sense of wanting to document this and put it on paper? Because you're an archivist at heart. That's what it feels like to me. And not just an archivist of stuff, but an archivist of information.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. I hope that's the case, Mark. I doubt, I hate to be this way. I love writing. I love writing.
Yeah,
I love producing podcasts.
I think you have a real gift for it. I love the way you write. Fluidity. I enjoy it.
Well, thank you. I'll be honest with you. I think any artist, and I'm using this in the broad sense, doesn't like what they produce. So if I look at something on the Retroist that I've done, and it's just generally to check and make sure I didn't misspell something, or you know, I just see all the mistakes. You know, so I don't know if I could ever write a book. Maybe something video related would be kind of cool. Like put it on YouTube.
Do you venture into the world of video editing?
A little bit with the diary Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just because, you know, whether it be recording somebody playing a video game or if I'm talking about at the beginning, I used to record like I would be playing a Magic's Dragonfire on the Atari 2600.
Right.
Through the computer, of course. And I would record that and then try to give some information, kind of like a mini podcast, you know. Mm-hmm. So I've done some editing like that.
So with the Retroist, I know that you work on your podcast, it sounds like, constantly. But the Retroist is more like my podcast in the sense where it's kind of intermittent. It gets released when it's done, it sounds like.
Right.
Which I can respect. I can totally respect that. And that's the beauty of podcasts as well. But do you know if, are you looking to change up any of that type of stuff? Because that's a podcast that has really remained the same since the beginning.
Sure, sure. No, as far as I know, the Retroist, he has started something, I guess it was with the last, quote, season. And that's exactly, so he puts a select number of episodes together.
Mm-hmm.
10 or 12. And that's like season, of course, what is he on now? Like season
like 11 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So mine probably comes
out. I stopped counting seasons.
You know.
Seasons are tough, man. Like, sure. You know, it's, I don't know. Once you get over like 100 episodes, you kind of, I don't know. All the numbering, it gets all weird. And for me anyway, I almost want to start over again. Just
sure.
I don't know. Like I, for instance, this particular podcast, I'm in season 13, right? Because I was doing seasons by the 12s.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not doing it anymore. So season 13 is the final season. It's just a season that will never end.
Right. Right.
I just refuse to go to 14. Never.
Well, like, and for myself, like you're saying, it is best to have multiple episodes for a new podcast.
Yeah.
Like I said, the Pop Culture Retrorama podcast. That's just not how I can work. So the first episode came out in December, and for some strange reason, iTunes took like over a month to carry the episode.
Wow.
It was weird. It was real weird. And just the second one, just a couple weeks back, went live, and that was I tackled DC Comics' 1994 series Starman, which is amazing.
And now, Mark, is that based off the movie? Or
No, okay. not in the least. Not in the least. And Mark, I promise you, man, you need to check this comic out because James Robinson, the writer of that, is basically us.
Really?
Well, even so much that his character, Jack Knight, which is the son of the Golden Age Starman, of the Justice Society of America, all that kind of stuff. He literally is an antiques and collectible dealer. I mean, the comic, there's stuff in the comic where he's talking about Bakelite products. And I know that may sound real hokey, but trust me, it comes off beautifully.
And, you're talking about Bakelite. You're my guy, you know?
Yeah. So I'm studying, 1994, I was recently a couple years out of high school and, you know, had a full-time job and I'm picking up this comic and they're talking about Viewmaster reels. They're talking about, painted shirts, Hawaiian shirts. And I'm like, I know what he's doing. Look, that's a vintage mummy poster that the artist put in the background. It's like, I love this.
So Starman from DC.
Yeah. DC Comics Starman. It was only 81 issues with a few annuals and specials. Like there was a crossover between Starman and Hellboy.
Okay.
So, let me tell you this. There is a moment in the series where it's Starman, the Golden Age Green Lantern, and Batman, and another character. And don't get me wrong, they're not fighting any bad guys at this exact moment, but they start talking about Woody Allen films.
I love Woody Allen films.
And Batman, of course, is like, you're wasting my time. You know, it's like,
I love that. That's all right. I think you might have pointed me towards my new thing. You know, I've been getting into the old horror comics.
Yeah.
You know, the old Tales from the Crypt, and you know, I was gifted a bunch of old ones from the 60s, and I almost don't want to read them because they're in such, you know, they're such fragile pieces of artifacts. So I've been able to find them online, you know, and read them that way.
Right.
And I love these. I love these comics. And so I've gotten back into the, I guess, 10-year-old Mark who would read, you know, Web of Spider-Man or whatever. I was, like I mentioned before, I'm more of a Marvel guy, but I'm definitely, you know, what's interesting is even as a kid, I always thought DC was the more serious comic. And even now with the horror comics, if you compare the Marvel and DC horror comics, DC is so much more badass.
Sure.
So well, I'm going to guess that Starman is right up my path.
I think in the past, yet again, personally, I think that's reversed the way I see it. I always saw DC as being kind of more fanciful, perhaps with, you know, due to characters like Superman, you know, things like that. But no, here's a horror comic that you should totally look up, and it's not on Internet Archive. Cough. Creepy.
Just called Creepy.
Oh. It is. You're going to love it. It's amazing.
When is it from?
So, 60s and 70s.
Okay. All right.
So, there's a Saturday Frights episode, and I'm going to go ahead and ruin the joke. We would always do an April Fool's joke episode. And even though of late, it's always been about gremlins, we're mm-hmm. always going to do the gremlins episode where we talk about the movie, of course. And something always happens. Like the last time.
I love it.
The last time we start it, we're doing it. I'm telling you. And it's all true. That's the whole, you know, it should always be true when you're doing a podcast. So I'm talking about the first watching Gremlins, and there's this weird noise. It's a ripping portal sound. And then it's kind of quiet for a second. And then the podcast starts over. And now it's like the Saturday morning podcast. And I kid you not, my co-host and myself, we literally do the entire synopsis for the Care Bears movie. But we never, ever, which I should actually say that at the end, something really horrible happens. But just stuff like that, we try to have fun. And of course, I guess it really only works if you're listening to it on the day we release it on April 1st. Mm-hmm. If you're going back to listen to it now, you're probably going, what?
No, but knowing the backstory, I love it. I see you released it on 4/1/2016. So
yeah.
I'm grabbing it right now. I'm downloading.
Well, the reason I brought this up was because of Creepy. There was another magazine Warren Publishing did, well, beside Vampirella and things like that, called Eerie. And for Creepy, the host was Uncle Creepy, obviously very much in the vein of the Crypt Keeper and things like that, or Cousin Eerie for Eerie Magazine. Well, the very first Saturday Frights podcast, April Fool's Day we did, and if you don't mind looking it up, it's called Cold Cuts.
Now, this was not released on April 1st, though.
It was, but it may not have gone through.
Oh, no, I see, for 2015. Yes.
Yeah. And just, you know, I think you'll enjoy that. I will spoil it. I don't mind. Basically, what we did is we just took one of the stories from, it was Eerie. It was a magazine. It wasn't a comic.
Right.
And we just made, I mean, we took that story, but we, since it was April Fool's, we tried to get everyone to think that this was a lost movie.
I love it.
We even started the episode saying, hey, this company has hired us to do the commentary for this movie. And and it's real actors.
And it's Roger Corman of all people.
Yeah.
So it's believable.
Yeah. You know. And I cannot tell you how many people bark. I'm talking weeks later after they had listened to it. There's like, we can't find this Blu-ray, or, you know, DVD or Blu-ray release. When is this coming out? It's like,
holy cow, really?
It's like, at the end of the episode, we said April Fool's Day. We told everyone that it was just an April Fool's Day joke. And there was two, maybe three people that private messaged me, and they were mad.
Like, wait, no, seriously, where is it?
Yeah, no, they were mad. They were like, I listened to your podcast to listen to movies that I may not have heard. Not to have an April Fool's Day joke played on. I was like, I'm so sorry. So
I'm doing a quick Google search. I want to see if it's made it. I bet you have somebody out there who wrote about it.
Could be. So
I love that. I love the fact that Roger Corman's cold cut.
You know what I was really worried about, Mark? And I contacted the Retros about this before we released it. I was like, okay, we're mentioning real people. Obviously, Roger Corman, we're mentioning these, like the studios mentioned in it that made the movie are fake, but it's all meta. I'm using studios from other films, mm-hmm. things like that. But I was really scared with like using Roger Corman or certain actors' names that, I mean, I asked the Retros, I said, you know, surely, you know, we can't be sued or anything, right? Because it's false, you know.
I don't see anybody making us think, especially Roger Corman. I would imagine that Roger Corman would be one of the few people who could see the real humor in, you know.
I hope so.
No, I don't think you. No, I mean, I always wonder, like, you know, what if I were to just say, hey, this podcast is sponsored by Sony, you know?
Right.
Like, can they sue me? You know, I guess. Well, it's very different. I love that. I love the fact that you created this this alternate reality for an April Fool's. I love that. I mean, there's nothing more interesting either than a lost movie. And Roger Corman definitely falls into the lost category, you know, with the Fantastic Four.
Oh, heck yeah.
And, you know, and you've seen that.
Great documentary there, Doomed, by the way, if you haven't seen it.
No, I interviewed the director years ago. I'm trying to remember his name. Before it came out, you know who else I spoke to is kind of friendly with him is Tim Lepetino.
Yeah.
And he's a really nice guy. He, of course, released the book, The Art of Atari.
It's an exceptional book.
Oh, I love it. It's one of my favorite big books. You know, some books don't fit correctly. And I have Kistory in that book and a few other really big books that just don't fit right anywhere. So they all kind of stay together.
Yeah.
And he's a Kiss fan, so he appreciated that. Because Kistory, yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's like a 9-pound book about Kiss.
Yes. So, he sometimes writes for the Retroist. But he's a professional journalist, a gentleman by the name of Brett Weiss.
Oh, I spoke to Brett as well.
Yeah. So he's a huge Kiss fan as well.
Yeah. You know, him and I spoke about, we went on a tangent about Lydia Chris. Yeah. We were talking about Kiss throughout our entire thing. I forget exactly why we were talking. These are back in my VHS Rewind focus days. So, you know, it's a cobwebs are there. Four years ago. But I'll dig out exactly why I did that. But he's such a nice guy. So is Tim.
Absolutely.
Very talented people. And actually, I went to the Museum of the Moving Image, and they have Tim's book right there, front and center, you know? And Brett's book as well, I think, you know? He did a book on Nintendo, I believe.
Super Nintendo, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think he did one. Did both. I'm not 100%. He can't keep up with these people. I wish I could write a book.
I wish my writing was good enough that, you know, I could do this for a living.
You're out of your mind if you don't think that. Like, you should really, really just kind of write something. I think you really do have a passion for it. And I don't know. I would think it would be great. Book by Vic Sage. Do it. No, seriously, do it. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, well, Vic, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I want to just mention the name of your podcast and where people could find out everything about you. And that would start at theretroist.com. But you have Saturday Night Frights. You have Pop Culture Retrorama. Diary of an Arcade Employee. I found this whole list of podcasts. Whether or not you're continuing them, they still exist.
they're still going. There's the Retro Radio Memories.
Yeah. And what other ones? What episode? What shows am I missing?
The only one I believe that we haven't talked about is my co-host, the Projectionist. He has his own podcast, the Projectionist Sinister Tales of Terror.
Well, I'm going to put a link to all of these podcasts in the show notes as well as on my website. Vic, I, you're always welcome to come back if you just want to, talk about anything that you might be working on, or even if you just want to review something. I also do a podcast about Little House on the Prairie, which is called Walnut Grove Cast. And I actually have spoken to about seven of the cast members at this point. it's very well received. It's like, I can't believe how many people listen to that show. And
It was a great TV show. It's one of the reasons, Mark.
Yeah. Well, but the cast members, they're all like really, really wonderful, like the nicest people. And they all like love each other like a real family, and it's just bizarre. And we review the episodes, and I don't know if you ever watched the show much.
Mark, one of the scariest things I've ever seen on television was a Little House on the Prairies episode.
The rape episode.
No.
Right. Oh,
do you remember the snake bite episode?
Snake bite episode?
Yeah. So, forgive me, the mother is by herself.
Wait, are you talking about when she gets tetanus?
Oh, is that what it was?
She scratches herself. That's when Ma scratches herself on the wagon.
And she has to cut open her own leg?
She's about to.
That's it. I have not seen it in forever. I thought it was a snake bite.
No, she's going to be alone for a certain amount of time. Pa's going to go to Mankato and get some seed or something. And she scratches herself. It's a simple scratch, And they're like, oh, you better have that looked at. You better have Doc Baker take a look at that, that type of stuff. And she's like, oh, I'll be fine. It's the 1880s. And it gets worse and worse and worse. And she gets a fever. And all of a sudden, everybody's putting off coming home. And there's that scene. There's a scene where her leg is up.
Swollen, wasn't it?
Swollen, beet red, and she has a huge knife. And you're like, Ma's going to cut her leg off. And I don't want to spoil it, but everything turns out fine.
I saw that as a kid. And obviously, sadly, in my brain, it was because of a snake bite. My grandmother...
So funny.
Literally that covered my eyes. So I was just hearing the basic end, not the end, but so I guess in my mind, I was picturing all this horrible, gore.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I've never heard of the snake bite thing, but now that I think about it, it seemed like it might have been that, but no, it was just a scratch.
Oh, wow.
It was the cautionary tale to tell all of us, to get a tetanus shot if we stepped on a nail. That was like the big thing when I was a kid. I say it all the time. There were two things that I thought I was going to die from, and that was tetanus, whatever that was, and quicksand. Those two things. And I thought Bigfoot would eventually pop up at the same time as the quicksand. But that never happened.
Well, that Bigfoot could be watching you right now.
I interviewed someone for Omniod who does cryptozoology research.
Yeah.
And we talk about it very seriously, but I said, my first introduction to all of this is the toys. Sasquatch, Million Dollar Man. This is my thing. And I brought up the quicksand to them as well. And it's always, they always get a kick out of that because... we are talking about something that was very, very big in the 70s, right? I mean, Bigfoot was like the big deal. You remember, absolutely. I'm sure.
Well, hey, even though it's sort of Bigfoot, I mean, the Legend of Boggy Creek.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was filmed not too far away from... The sequel was actually filmed, well, part of it, I should say. The beginning of The Legend of Boggy Creek, the sequel, was filmed 5 minutes away from me.
So, oh, really? Was it?
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
Over there in Northwest Arkansas.
University of Arkansas. Yeah.
You're a fascinating talk, Nick. And, you know, I really hope, like, we can, expand this and talk again very soon. Again, you're welcome anytime you want to come back on. Hopefully my voice will heal at some point. I'll be less groggy.
I hope you get to feel better, Mark. Seriously, thank you. Thank you for letting me be on the show. It's been a blast.